This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak radio show. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at thepeoplespeakradio.com. There you can also listen live to our past shows on our iPod Ready section. And if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. So just go to the website for details. That's thepeoplespeakradio.com. You know, tonight we have a wonderful gentleman with us that was supposed to be here, and we got screwed up. But it's never too late to have such a great American with us. Well, not an American, great native of this country. Russell Means has lived a life like few others in this world. He has been the instigator and the initiator of so many programs for the indigenous Americans, the indigenous people of this country that, we started talking about the Constitution, now you got me all ruffled. Go ahead. Hello, Russell. How are you? Welcome to the People Speak Radio.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I've been waiting for this for a while.
Well, we have been, too. We've got a lot of friends on your side, Russell. And, Russell, part of the work that you have done, first of all, Russell is not only an accomplished activist, the instigator of many unbelievable contributions to his native people, and to a cohesive lifestyle within the unfortunate circumstances that the indigenous people of that live in the United States have to deal with on a daily basis. But he's taken his work to and his activism to acting, a new genre for him that has that brings back the image of the strength and the character that Native Americans have for many years didn't have in theater and in movies. A lot of people talk about Wounded Knee and the events that surrounded Wounded Knee. Russell, you in 1973 led a protest surrounding that. Can you tell us a little bit about how you was? That wasn't the beginning of your activism, was it?
No, the beginning was in the Bay Area of Northern California when my dad and four other Lakota under our constitutionally mandated treaty, we laid claim to Alcatraz in 1964. In 1969, I joined the American Indian Movement. Right after the American Indian Movement that I supported, issued a series of challenges to the churches. That was the National Council of Churches at the Triennial Convention in Detroit in 1969. That's when I joined the American Indian Movement. And from there, it snowballed in a strategy of political confrontation, because we are a people out of sight and out of mind. And that was AIM's strategy, was to get our truths before the world, not only the United States of America, but to the world, about what we are all about, the truth of us, and to the international community about the truth of the United States of America.
What is the truth of the United States of America, Mr. Means?
Well, according to their own records, they're the only nation in the history of the human race that has been at war every year of its existence. Every year of its existence. Well over 200 years now. So here we have a country that professes to be a country of peace and a country, a peace-loving country and a nation of laws. And yet the Constitution of the United States was first begun being raped by the U.S. government in 1826. And it continued to be since that time. You know, the country was barely 50 years old. Wasn't even 50 years old. Yeah, it was just about 50 years old when it started violating its own constitution and continues to do so up to and including today, as you know, with the Supreme Court decision that gives a piece of paper more rights and more wealth and protected wealth than the individual human being that is a citizen. That being the decision to allow corporations to continually bribe politicians in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere, anywhere and everywhere.
Now, we're talking about the Constitution. Briefly, I will remind everyone, and I think you will agree with me, that the Constitution of the United States of America was loosely based on the Native American culture and its belief systems. Was it not, Russell?
Yes, that's true. It was inspired by Great Law of Peace of the Iroquois Confederacy in 1746, fully 30 years prior to the formation, Benjamin Franklin, to an assembly of representatives from the colonies in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, made a speech, 1746, and I quote, "If those savages to the north can form a near-perfect union that has endured for centuries, why cannot us, a more civilized people, form a more perfect union?" Unquote. That was Benjamin Franklin. Consequently, utilizing the Great Law of Peace, they conjured up the Constitution of the United States. However, unfortunately for the United States and its people, the Constitution really only represents about one-third of the values and principles of the Great Law of Peace. Nevertheless, it's still a great document, and it's there to ensure individual liberty through representative government. That's what the Indian people gave to the world, because prior to the formation of the United States of America, individual liberty guaranteed through representation of the government was never heard of. Not any Greeks, European, or English ever came up with the idea of giving out individual freedom through representative government.
And being such a great law passed on to what many still believe is a great constitution, here right within the very constitution itself, indigenous Americans in this country are denied their rights on a constant daily basis.
Yes, it started under Lincoln and continued to get more drastic and more socialized throughout until you came up with Clinton, under Clinton, the Terrorist Act of 1995, which was a precursor to the Patriot Act under Bush, which has taken away all your rights. And now it's a ridiculous country where, like I say, a piece of paper known as a corporation has more freedoms than a human U.S. citizen, but none of the penalties. You can't put a piece of paper in jail. You can't fine a piece of paper. So it's the United States of America and its people are now prisoners of the most sophisticated bribery system. Actually, it's not even sophisticated. They call it by many names, campaign financing, and other yeah. such names, meaning bribery. It's a country blatantly involved in bribery of its ruling classes, and the American people don't do anything about it. But you see, the whole purpose of individual liberty through representative government is that you are granted freedom. You have taken freedom. You have employed and made sure that you have individual freedom. But the first axiom of being free is that you are free to be responsible. But the American people, since the 1840s, haven't been responsible. Because that's when they first...
What have they been?
Pardon?
What have they been? What have they been?
Irresponsible. So consequently, what they're suffering through now, blatant bribery by the ruling elite, and that the rich will continue to get richer while the country and the people are robbed of productivity and the means of production. And robbed of forming alliances among themselves.
Mm.
Any kind of an alliance. It's continues in such a way as that the American people and the result of their being irresponsible, they're largely to blame for everything they're going through right now. Joblessness, umpteen wars, and wars all over that are unconstitutional. The country's not saying a thing. The fact that these wars are unconstitutional. You know, the last war to be constitutionally mandated was World War II. Every war since is an unconstitutional act by the government of the United States. The Supreme Court doesn't do anything to stop it. They're the last arbiter of the Constitution. The Congress, supposedly and allegedly the people's representative, allow the presidency to get stronger and stronger until now. It is virtually a king. It's royalty. Albeit it changes hands, but it changes hands at the whims of the rich elite. Everybody that becomes the president has to make an agreement to do the bidding of the people responsible for bribing the government.
And do you see as a future for the United States any salvation under the circumstances? And if there is any salvation, how do we reach that salvation, Russell?
Well, you do have the Constitution, and therefore you have yourselves. And the country does not and should not employ, but you know, the people who think of themselves as responsible and go to the polls and vote, they're the most irresponsible. The people who vote are the most irresponsible because they're not policing those political powers. They are only emotionally tied to these, and that's the only reason they vote, because of their emotions, not because of their brain, because they don't have any. They're brain dead. They go out and vote for these bribed, crooked, blatant, illegal, acting and performing politicians. They do not, you know, it's impossible to have a representative government with individual liberties with just a two-party system. Because it means mob rule. And the minority, it could be 50% plus one, or even less than 50%, witness Bush, an unconstitutional president, and the country did nothing. The people did nothing. He was not elected. He was selected by one, just one Supreme Court judge.
And that's all it took.
Because it was a 5-4 vote. And it was an illegal vote.
Was.
It states clearly in the Constitution that the electors of the state will elect the President of the United States. The only thing, according to the Constitution, that the Supreme Court could do in 2002 was to order another election in Florida so that the proper electoral college could be filled from that state and therefore make the appropriate. And they could have done it before, by January, before inauguration. It could have been done. But the country sat by and allow an unconstitutional president to rule for another 4 years. And look what he got into, got the American people into. Total irresponsibility. And
absolutely.
Obama.
And I absolutely agree with
one
you.
Inch
you think
better.
He's even worse, huh? You don't think he's any better?
Obama? He's an embarrassment.
I
and in fact, I never thought I would ever, ever say this. But I know, having been brought up the way I was brought up and in being in the movement, the revolutionary period of the 60s and 70s, I know that Obama was selected.
Let me ask you something, Russell. Under these circumstances,
what?
And I absolutely agree with you. Don't mistake me. That's my disclaimer. I am absolutely in total agreement with you. So how do we overcome this? How do we get effective leadership? Leadership such as the great days of Sitting Bull, the Great Elk. How do we get leaders that can look at our country and take it back from this corruption, take it back, if we as the American people don't do anything about, as you said, stopping corruption in our voting at our booths, stopping this bribery situation, eliminating lobbyists, at least controlling and making them become more transparent in where the funding is coming from. How do we do this? We have an elected elite situation, and we have a people that doesn't care enough to do anything about it. So what happens to the United States of America?
Well, unfortunately for the United States, both financially and everything, because of the ruling elite of America and Europe, are guilty of groupthink.
Groupthink.
And this has been brought forth in the past year and a half about how the elite are still hanging on to the ways of their patriarchal world that has continued for 6,000 years. You have to have a paradigm shift. There's no other way. Now, when I mention matriarchy, as the way forward, and well, actually the way backwards, because indigenous people are matriarchs the world over. But matriarchy is not a system of majority rule. It is not a system of voting. It is a system of celebrating the sexes. Each sex celebrates their strengths and recognize everyone else's strengths. It's difficult to and impossible to get that kind of message over to the patriarchal minded Demopublicans. So the Demopublicans, we have to have a complete sea change, eliminate both of those parties. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. Let me ask you, there's so many questions here that pertain to the indigenous people. First of all, there's something that I absolutely love, a couple of things that I absolutely love about your statements. One of them is that you call the newcomers Europeans, and that you're in the process of teaching American Indians how to resist genocides at the hands of these Europeans. You don't call them Americans, you call them Europeans.
Yes, that's true.
What are some of the ways that you would teach people to resist?
Well, I believe small is beautiful. In fact, there's a book out by E.F. Schumacher, who's deceased now, but he was an economist, a renowned economist. In fact, there's a mm-hmm. society now in his memory in the U.K., the United Kingdom. The E.F. Schumacher Society, and they sponsored me back on a lecture tour of England, and I was very fortunate. But he put forth actually a matriarchal concept where small is beautiful, and that's how I am approaching it through the Republic of Lakota. It's a lengthy explanation about the Republic of Lakota, but we need not go there because we're talking about a paradigm shift. We have to give and acknowledge neighborhoods as completely sovereign so that we can break down and get it back to the family. But neighborhoods have to be able to control their commerce, their comings and goings, everything. Everything. But the key to neighborhoods being sovereign is absolute adherence to unanimous consent. In other words, complete consent. I forget the term, but you cannot have anyone disagree. Everyone has to agree on every decision.
So it's based on a cooperative.
Yes, that's why I broke it down to neighborhoods. And neighborhoods could be two houses, two different families, or it could be 20 or 200. It doesn't matter what the size of the neighborhood is. What matters is that everybody has the unanimous consent doctrine, that no one can disagree. If you disagree with anything, then it cannot be passed. With any kind of decision.
Some people would call that socialism.
But what happens almost immediately with neighborhood sovereignty is you immediately do not need police. Therefore, you don't need jails. Therefore, you don't need courts, judges, or lawyers.
But some people would call
that
socialism.
Yeah, that's the only kind. But you can't get people to grasp that, or even to begin to implement it. But you do have it. The Quakers operate on that principle in the United States and all over the world. The Quakers. Well, they're white people. I know. I used to work with them closely back in the late 70s, early 80s. And the Iroquois Confederacy, they're still doing it. Not only, but, you know, the imaginary border between Canada and New York has split them apart, but they still operate that way. But they utilize the Klan system.
That cooperative kind of system. Now, let me ask you, a lot of people fear that as a socialist situation. Now, I don't, because I understand the nature of cooperatives. I sit on the board of directors of an entity that is trying to help nurture cooperative style businesses based on the Mondragon system in Spain. Now, when you talk about that kind of entity, it becomes a self-sustaining community. And sustaining ourselves in light of a global economy is probably going to be the only way people in America, the average Joe, are going to ever be able to at least maintain some semblance of a decent lifestyle. in this country. Well, as a matter of fact, we have over, I think there's over 100,000 cooperatives in the United States as we speak. But getting people to do that on a wholesale level is going to be pretty rough. I mean, let me ask you, Russell, within the Lakota and all of the other indigenous tribes, have you been able to maintain that kind of entity, a sovereignty like that?
As I mentioned, yes. The Iroquois are the best example.
Uh-huh.
They're still operating in that venue on their land they've held for eons in New York and Canada. And they stand up for their continued sovereign rights. Among the Lakota, it is still being maintained, not in a formal fashion, but in an informal, because it's against the law for us to form those kinds of entities. The law that is applied to us on Indian reservations, you see, on Indian reservations, we do not have any constitutional protections of any kind. People don't know that in America. They think, oh, you're U.S. citizens. But not on an Indian reservation, we're not U.S. citizens.
No, you're not, yes.
So we don't have any protection, so we have the absolute rule here. We have there's illegal search and seizure. There's everything is illegal. We have no freedom of speech on the reservation, no freedom of religion, nothing of the guarantees that you have. And so that's why one of the contributing factors of keeping us poor, unless we're stealing money, which is what casinos are, it's illegal theft. I mean, it's legalized theft now.
It's legalized stuff, yeah, I was going to say. Let me ask you something. First of all, there was a great statement that you wrote a while back. The indigenous people of this country have always lived under the oral tradition, the oral culture. And you wrote... Well, you didn't write this. You asked it be written in a book. It said, and you said, it seems the only way to communicate with the white world is through the dead, dry leaves of a book. Can you explain why, what you meant by that?
Well, linguists have ascertained, linguists of the world, and so has anybody with any kind of sense whatsoever. Once you write a language, you limit that language. It's absolutely limited to what you write down. Consequently, what happens is your mind becomes immediately lazy. You're not utilizing your brains to its full capacity because you're relying on the written word. You know you do not have to remember anything. Because you can look it up. And with the computer, it even advances that laziness even further. If you don't believe it, ask any teacher in high school or any professors today about the kids coming in today. For instance, the cursory alphabet is almost extinct. In fact, among the younger generations that have come in the last couple of years into college, they don't know how to write, and they don't know how to read writing.
No.
Because everything is in block letters and abbreviations.
Well, I have to admit, I'm a perfect example of that. There was a time when I could actually spell, and then came along spell check and forget it. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, which brings me to an interesting topic, Russell. Total immersion schools. I absolutely love that. Can you please explain to our listeners what total immersion schooling is?
Okay. To simply put it in a crass explanation, it's brainwashing to the ultimate degree. Your Catholic schools have it, your Mormon schools, your Jewish schools, your Chinese schools, your Polish schools, your Spanish schools. your right-wing Christian evangelical schools, all of that. The indigenous people, up to 25 years ago, hadn't utilized that concept to continue educating our people. So what we have devised, thanks to the Maoris of New Zealand, and that's a beautiful, beautiful success story that happened within the 25 years, nationwide, but it's too lengthy to go into right now. The point of total immersion is we're just taking a page from you all. And we have adopted or readopted the teachings of our ancestors, and we don't allow English. English is learned at home and utilized at home in the public, but while in school, no English allowed. And we start with 3 and 4 year olds, and then after every year after that, we keep feeding in the 3 year olds, and the school grows year by year. Now, it's a much more advanced form of teaching. The utilization of all the departments of the brain is necessary because you're teaching as your ancestors teaching. You learn about natural law, which is a balanced way of learning. You actually adhere to the teachings of Cain and Abel. You do not have children that are close together, so you eliminate envy and competition and jealousy. All right?
How do you do that?
Because you develop the indigenous philosophy that each child born is the center of the universe. So you have to adequately pay attention to the child until it's time for it to leave the side of its mother. And every culture, patriarchal or matriarchal, knows that about 6 years of age, 5 or 6, the child is ready to leave the side of its mother. But in that first 5 or 6 years, it is absolutely treated like the center of the universe. You can be having an important council meeting among the adults, and in the room walks 3 or 4 year olds, and it stops. The meeting stops, and everyone listens or pays attention to the child.
Wow.
Thereby inherently giving that child the knowledge, wow, I am the center of the universe. And that self-confidence then is further nurtured by the community and the schooling system afterwards. That's total immersion education. And so the child grows up without rancor, without competition, and because you don't have English, you don't divide by age, you don't divide the schooling by age, and you don't have bowels. Therefore, you don't create Pavlov's dogs.
Unbelievable. What an amazing concept. When I think about that, it's like you said, wow, I am the center of the universe. The empowerment behind that is so huge,
exactly.
So voluminous. It is amazing.
It's stunning
that people don't do that always.
Right there.
That is just amazing. Have you actually started any of the schools? I know you're in the process. You were in the processes of getting government funding for some of these.
No, schools. I will not accept government funding.
Oh,
that's almost
okay,
sure
great.
Failure.
I will not accept government
because right now the government will not allow us to learn our languages or the religious sects that have. Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Hello?
I'm listening.
Oh, I thought it went dead. At any rate, the religious schools that are on our reservations, the public school, all the schools, the public schools, the government schools, are now, they will not allow us. They'll give us an hour a day, but you can't learn a language in an hour a day.
No.
It's impossible.
No, you
can't. Impossible.
So let me ask you, if you are not obligated, if you're not American citizens on sovereign native land,
right.
Can they really stop you from doing something like this?
They're not supposed to stop you. It's in the Constitution. I mean,
well,
it's in international law. Now, that's
there
why...
There you go, folks. They're not supposed to stop you, but they can do anything they want. So, here goes a defunct constitution if we continue to allow these things to happen. These
exactly.
violations of indigenous people, these violations of voters, these violations of the constitution, all of these things are you know... It isn't just a matter of dealing with indigenous people. It is the rights of any people that
right.
are at stake here.
That's why in 1988 I ran for president on the Libertarian ticket. And I guess I was defeated on the first ballot at the Libertarian Convention by Ron Paul. Who subsequently
ran for
president.
No, I didn't know. Very interesting.
In the last election. But I ran it because the Constitution was being violated and raped.
Do you consider running again?
No, I will not.
Can a sovereign run for the United States for president of this country, Russell?
I don't believe the system or the people can accomplish what the Constitution calls for. I think it's too late. And most of you have found out. Now, you know, you got, in real terms, you got 20% or more unemployment. One out of five.
Hello? Russell?
This land is yours. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution. If you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economists on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's the People Speak every Tuesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak. We've had some technical difficulties, and we're not able to get our guest back, but it was a wonderful interview. Russell Means is an incredible human being, an incredible a sovereign and an incredible American, as it seems. You heard him here. He is a firm believer in the mandates established within the Constitution. He's just disappointed that Americans are not as inspired by these very mandates as he is. Our guest next week is Dr. Clovis Maksud. Dr. Maksud is an incredible human being. He is presently the Professor of International Relations and the Director of the Center for the Global South of at American University in Washington, D.C. Clovis is a personal hero of a lot of Arab Americans, and I am very excited to talk with him. I met him a few weeks ago at an event here in Michigan, and it is going to be a distinct honor to have him here, and I'm hoping that a lot of people will be here to hear his position and his feelings about the issues in the Middle East, as well as the Israeli-Palestine issue. My name's Basma Farhat. Don't wear it out. When the people speak, they make a difference. Get out there and speak.
This land is yours. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.